Hi, welcome back to my goddamn quest for happiness. It is episode number 6, and this week we are doing something slightly different because we have our first ever guest on. I am very excited. I've been speaking to Simone Seals. I know her from the conservatoire in Scotland. She is a cellist and a mental health advocate. I am really, really thrilled to have her on. In this episode, we talk about mental health, obviously. We talk about trauma because Simone really, really, really knows her shit when it comes to trauma. How it affects people in schools. And we are talking about the whole situation in the United States at the moment that people should be aware of now, not the least because of what happened with George Floyd. And we are obviously talking about how that affects people's mental health, how that can bring up trauma, and how that relates to happiness. So I hope you enjoy this. Thanks so much for joining. So without further ado, here is Simone. Hi, and welcome to my goddamn quest for happiness. I am Anne Klein, actor, comedian, and life coach. Okay, sure. This podcast is all about happiness. What makes us happy? What makes some people happier than others? And why can't I get it? I've been reading a lot of books. I've been talking to many, many people, watching lots of YouTube videos, rabbit hole, and I have discovered a few things, and I would love to share just that with you. Start?
I guess so, yeah.
Exciting times. Well, okay. I am going to start by saying thank you for coming on the show because I am really excited. And you're our first guest, so that's a milestone.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Do you just want to maybe introduce yourself a little, tell our listeners a bit about you?
Yeah, sure. My name is Simone. I just finished my master's in cello performance at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland, and I have a slight obsession with studying trauma. So I know an above average amount about it for someone who's not had any study in psychology.
Right. How did you get into working with trauma?
So originally it started with just an obsession in psychology in like middle school, high school. I really desperately wanted to understand how people worked because I didn't get them. Right. And so I would study human behavior, and then into college, having my own sorts of traumas and things like that, I then wanted to understand myself more and got into trauma, met people who had experienced trauma, and realized that most everyone has experienced either like a lowercase t trauma or a capital T trauma, and that like affects our lives for the rest of our lives. So I got into wanting to help people in that way.
That's really nice. and you do that professionally as well, right? You go into schools and you help educators with that?
Yeah, so that's sort of the goal. The main goal is really going into education systems and like revamping.
Right.
How, particularly in music education, how we talk and relate to others.
And can you tell me a bit more about that? How would you want that to change?
So it really is more about how, like, teachers understand themselves. So it starts to, you have to know about yourself to really then be able to help others. And especially in like higher education and music, you have an old school style of teaching, which is starting to, you know, fade out, but it's still very much there. If you have to be perfect, you have to do this. It doesn't matter like who you are. You need to practice 8 hours a day, blah, blah, blah. And it's very rigid. And also leaves no room for the individual.
Right.
I feel that they sort of just expect it to happen, but you have to like nurture the person as well. So really I'd like to change the mindset behind how one-to-one teaching works and how like studio classes work, and really building a positive environment that nurtures the person and doesn't say, oh, once you walk into my room, you have to leave everything at the door.
Right.
Impossible.
Yeah.
And if you think you're doing that, you're probably in denial.
Right. So it's like seeing them as people rather than just machines that come in to do music.
Yeah.
So how do you feel trauma and happiness relates?
I think, oh my gosh. I mean, as someone who has experienced multiple little t traumas throughout their life, I think that maybe it wasn't until like college that I realized I was actually deeply unhappy, that like I sort of realized I was dissociating from, like, since middle school. I was like, okay, everything sucks. I don't get people. People don't get me. Like, home life was good and bad. My dad was emotionally abusive, so I never wanted to be home. And it's like not having any sense of grounding. Then you go into college where you're like on your own for the first time. I moved away. And thankfully, I mean, I went to a private college, which cost way too much money being in the States. But it did include free counseling. So there is a silver lining. And I was like, really just something happened. So I came out like freshman year to some people. And there was this one woman, of course, like classic gay kid. You're online, you meet someone, you come out to them, you like them, blah, 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 they like you. But then 2 weeks later, she was like, actually, you know what? I don't like you. And I was like, wait, this doesn't add up. So I was so emotional, like the most emotions I'd ever felt. And I was like, I don't know what's happening to me. So I went to counseling. I was like, something's wrong. I'm like, I'm crying all the time. I can't stop. And usually I'm able to just like shut it down. And sort of just like realizing, oh, there's all these things that are leading me to me thinking that I was happy, but really I was just like feeling a baseline of nothing because that was easier. And I still to this day have moments where I'm like, I wish I was a robot and I didn't feel anything because it seems like easier to not feel anything. Because for me, it's very stark. Like, if I'm going to be happy, then I'm also going to be unhappy.
Right.
Like, the two have to exist.
Yeah.
And I, as much as being happy is enjoyable, and I was just talking to my mom about this last night, as much as being happy is enjoyable, like, the unhappiness I find so difficult to deal with as someone who's still learning to cope with everything, that I'd rather, like, not have anything. So I think for people who've experienced trauma, that like knowing such like disdain and like unhappiness and a low feeling of self-worth, that like feeling happy is almost scary.
Right.
Because it's unusual. Mm-hmm. Like just a few months ago, I like actually had a decent relationship and it was good. And it, like, it was really good. And I was like, this is weird. Don't know what to do with it. Would rather self-sabotage.
Right.
And, you know, things happen, it ended, but being like, oh, that was really good, but now I'm unhappy, and now I wish that the good thing had never happened, because, like, I don't want to be unhappy.
Right.
So it's a constant push and pull of, like, having to reconcile that there is a balance, and that at some point you will stop experiencing them in extremes and, like, have a moment where it's like, okay, I was happy today, and I was unhappy yesterday. But, like, you know, life happens.
Right.
And sometimes I'm in that mood. But these last few weeks, it's been more of a, I hate everything.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, a lot has been going on as well. So I think it's relatable. Yeah. But I find that really interesting because, like, positive psychology is quite a new thing. And they were saying that up until then, they'd only been studying things like depression and all the negative emotions. But actually, the absence of depression does not equal happiness. And I think that's a bit like what you were saying just now. You can get rid of all those negative feelings, but that doesn't mean you feel well.
Yeah.
So you almost have to work through the trauma and work through the negative feelings and accept them and, like, yeah, and just work through it to be able to achieve the happiness as well.
Yeah, for sure. And there's so much that happens in the brain as well that, like, prevents someone from really understanding why they're unhappy. So when you experience any sort of trauma, and I think it's important to understand that trauma doesn't have to be, like, a big event. Right. The way that I see it, it's that anything that you yourself are unable to process. So trauma is a very singular experience. And it's how you interpret a situation or event. So sometimes, or when you do experience trauma, the brain sort of just goes into an automatic fight, flight, freeze response. And anytime you're triggered by or reminded of that trauma, your brain will automatically put you in that stress response mode without you being able to really control it or have a choice in the matter. Because your brain's like, oh, we know what happened last time, so this is what you're going to do. And really, like, the different therapy modes of understanding that are, like, starting on the, like, what I call the lizard brain, and I think other people call it the lizard brain. Like, the one where you just, like, sleep, eat, pee, poop, like, very basic, like, baby stuff. that gets disrupted when you're distressed because your body's like, something's wrong. And so we need to go way back to basics.
Right.
So we're going to mess up your sleep. We're going to mess up your digestive system until you figure out how to get rid of this stressful thing, which is really, you know, upsetting if you don't understand what's happening, and it can cause a lot of health problems because your brain is just trying to get you to like process this really emotionally disturbing thing. But it doesn't know how to tell you that because, unfortunately, like our thoughts aren't our brain.
Right.
So I think really understanding how the body is affected by trauma can help people like sort of understand themselves and seek out how to help themselves and then find a balance of happiness in their lives.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, it is. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because especially I think a lot of people, once they're in that place, it becomes really hard to seek out help, to realize, or maybe you do realize you need help and you realize what you should be doing, but it's really hard to find the motivation to actually take action and do the things that would help you out of it.
Yeah. And it's scary to like face the things that upset you. No, I think it's just really important to understand yourself and like that it's not impossible to get through things. Like, right. It feels very much impossible. And for some people who've been doing, you know, numbing themselves for years or decades, it can very much feel, you know, like it'll never change. And it's scary because if that's all you know, why would you want to change? You're like, well, you know, I've lasted this long doing this thing. But there is always something more, even when you've like, you know, I've been going to therapy for like 6 years and like, there's still something more to work on. There's always more, but starting small and just working on one thing at a time and really just knowing that it can get better and it's going to be slow and it's going to be hard and you're going to want to quit, but that it's not impossible to achieve balance and achieve happiness and achieve joy.
Also, something you said when we talked earlier was, and I found that really interesting because it's so close with what I've been talking about around happiness, is that part of your mission is to let people know that they have control over this, because we tend to think once things have been bad for a long time that we have no impact on it changing, and that like things are just happening to us and there's nothing we can do to get out of that.
Yeah. That you said, what, learned helplessness.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, our brains will do whatever they can to protect us, but sometimes it goes into overdrive.
Right.
And we need to, even if, what is it? It's like the people who can escape, let's say they've been, you know, kidnapped or something, they're in an abusive relationship and they have all these opportunities, they don't take it because they don't think it'll work.
Right.
And that happens on small scales where we sort of trap ourselves or in really negative situations because we don't see that it's possible to get out of it. And a lot of trauma work is really learning that you can rewire your brain. And while you may always have these reactions, you can learn to respond differently. So like one of my triggers was like people talking about overdose. And while it's still something that's touchy, I sometimes just have to go away and have a panic attack and cry about it. But then it's like, okay, I'm out of it. And it doesn't last days. But it's understanding that my brain is doing this response in a way to protect me, but that's not how I want to be responding in the moment. And really like having coping mechanisms to get out of that spiral, even if it's for 10 minutes so that you can go and spiral somewhere else.
Right. Yeah.
But just like, okay, cope, gotta keep the face, gotta do all this. And I recognize that this is happening. But then that gives you a sense of control that you're seeing that it's not you just popping off, that it's you just like, oh, this is something that I really don't like hearing.
Right. Yeah.
But I can get through it and it's just going to take me like, you know, an hour or two, but then I'll be back.
And the fact that it's possible to rewire your brain is also really fascinating, I find, because I think we're taught so much that you're born a certain way, you have certain genes, there are things that happen to you, and that just creates a human out of you, and you just have to deal with whatever you were given. And the fact that you have the ability to actively change that is quite empowering, I find. And then obviously right now, like, there's a lot of shit happening, not just with the pandemic, but definitely a lot more in the States than everywhere else with the Black Lives Matter movement. And I'm sure that has a huge impact on people's happiness, and that might trigger a lot of trauma as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, that in itself, just seeing all the stuff they post on media is traumatic. And I don't understand why people think it's okay to share, like, videos of people being murdered.
Right. Yeah.
But you don't do that for anything else. And even when you have, like, war imagery, it's all blurred out. So it's really hard to go on social media now, because everything is just a constant reminder that people who look like me are dying or being not di- well dying one because of the pandemic, because they're dying a disproportionate rate.
Yeah.
But then also just being straight up murdered in the street. And now you have stories of, like, Black people being found hanging in trees. And it's like, they're saying it's suicide. And we all know that, why would anyone choose that for themselves? And there are other ways. But yeah, so it's very, very hard to deal with. And it, I think it really affects, for me personally, it affects my self-worth. So as someone who already, like, deals with self-worth issues, and then seeing all this imagery, like, feeling on a societal level that I'm not worth anything is, like, really difficult. And it doesn't really help however many people tell you that you matter, because, like, it doesn't change what you see every day and what you know historically. Like, because it's not just an isolated incident of, like, this year or these few months. It's literally decades and centuries of being told and talked about in a way that's almost throwaway, and people not really learning about what happened to slaves and how really awfully they were treated, and not ever really seeing those stories in a way that doesn't center whiteness.
Right.
Because whenever you do see stories about slavery, it's almost always also about how there was that one nice white person who freed them or, like, gave them an extra meal and things like that.
Right.
There was a Chelsea Handler did a series called Chelsea Does, and she did one, Chelsea Does Racism, which I found really impactful to see her just going in and really doing that work as a white person, just being like, you guys are messed up. And her also having her own issues with, like, being racist at times and trying to learn more and trying to own up to it. And I just really respect, like, white people who just admit that they don't know a diddly darn thing about what it is to be a Black person or what it is to be a Native American and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's one scene where she goes in and she's in the South and she's talking to these people who their ancestors had plantations, and they're like, well, we treated the slaves well.
Right.
And she was like, but you had slaves. And then they were like, why are you attacking me? And she's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And then she talks to a college educated white guy who thinks that World War II was not, like, just propaganda.
Oh, like, my God. Yeah.
That none of that really happened, and it was all just war propaganda. And she says something that I really found funny. It's like, it goes to show you that you don't, it's not just people with one tooth that are out here thinking these things. It's like fully educated people that have these thoughts and values. And that is where it gets almost more dangerous.
Yeah. That's
really
scary.
People that can really argue.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also thought it was really interesting. There was this moment where, I think that was the same episode, where she was talking to her ex-boyfriend from when she was younger, and she was saying how they got stopped by the police and they had drugs in the car and she got away with it. And she always thought it was because she was really good at just talking her way out of things, and her boyfriend went into prison. So, and she said, it's not until now that I realized it's not because I was so good at talking. It was because I was white and he was Black.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, like, that's a hard pill to swallow, I can imagine. But it's just the way that, like, we individually move through the world is, I think, really hard to recognize. And I will always say that, like, white people are inherently racist. And that's not to say that white people are inherently bad or evil. Mm. It's just that the way that you've grown up in the world, you're going to miss things that mm-hmm. are clearly racist to someone who's Black.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is a place in my undergrad, a breakfast place, that was 100% racist. Always had Fox News playing. Mm. The only Black person they had working there was the cleaner. But they had really good breakfast. So I would go every once in a while knowing full well that, like, you know, they're going to treat me differently and I'm going to be the one Black person in the room. And I went with someone who I was seeing at the time who was white. And she said, oh, I think just like, oh, they treated me really differently from when I was with my dad. And I was like, well, yeah, because you're with me and I'm Black. She's like, no, I think it's because, like, you know, we're gay. And I was like, no, that's not it. I've been with Blake and we get treated the same. Blake's one of my white guy friends. And I was like, and I've been treated the same way. This is just how it is.
Right.
And she's like, no, no, no. Like, I don't think that's it. And she's like, I think you just need to understand they just maybe have more traditional values. And I was like, they have more traditional values of, like, lynching people? But it was one of those moments of, like, you don't understand that, like, I'm telling you that was racist.
Right.
And you want to see the good in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what you're doing is denying my experience, which is also being a little bit racist.
Right. Yeah.
And it's those things of just not listening to other people's experiences or always being like, oh, maybe it was this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, nope, it's because I look the way I do.
Right.
So.
Oh, boy. I mean, obviously, also, this is not a time to say, how can we get you happy again? Because I think this is a time to be angry. I don't think maybe happiness is the right emotion during this time. But do you personally have any, like, coping mechanisms or ways to stay at least sane and healthy throughout this?
Yeah, I think for me, like, talking to other Black people and just, like, us healing together and having that community, like, having moments of joy in that way of, like, just, you know, talking trash about one another and, like, and saying, like, stupid things and sort of being together is really important as a Black person right now and not feeling isolated, which, of course, like, I mean, the States, no one's isolated right now, but but here in Scotland, like, it's quite difficult because we do have to, we're still advised to stay, you know, safe and stay at home and things like that. So it's harder to find that. But, you know, even though Zoom, I think, is exhausting at times, being in the, like, just having a big group chat with all your Black friends is, like, is really nice. Other things I've been doing, just, like, I've been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, a stupid amount. I watched, like, 6 seasons in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Like, oh, it's, yeah. I'm almost, like, drag raced out now. Because hours upon hours every single day. But watching that and, like, you know, seeing the community there and,
right.
And, like, you know, a community, like, the intersection of the community of, like, gay and Black and talking about, you know, their experiences was really nice and to hear and, like, not feel so alone. What else? I'm, like, starting to get into, like, more arts and craftsy stuff because I always thought I was really bad at it, so I never did it. But now I'm like, you know what? They say art therapy works, so I'm just gonna, like, I'm just gonna, like, draw whatever I want.
Yeah.
And I not care. So that's been nice. I have some paint. I might do some painting today, actually, and just, great, like, see what comes out.
Lovely.
But yeah.
Will journaling you post it online for us?
Oh my God. No, it's going to be ugly. So.
Yeah, but with that, you'll give permission to other people to do ugly drawings as well.
True. I guess you're like, art therapy. Don't judge me.
Exactly.
Go and share your ugly paintings.
Yeah, we should start that. But obviously, if it's therapy, it's personal. People don't have to share that. You don't have to share that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, look at my ugly painting today. This is how I feel.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like a lot that people can take out of that. And lastly, I would like to ask you, what does happiness mean to you personally?
What does happiness mean to me? I think that happiness, like, is... So I have one particular memory when they go, like, what's your safe space? You know, and, like, they're like, go back to that safe space.
Mm-hmm.
I was 17 and my cello teacher, who, like, I called my cello mom, I just helped her clean out her, like, storage unit. We went back to her little house and we got Panera and I had like a Thai salad. Right. And we were sitting on our back porch and she was like living right across from like a little lake. And it was just sitting on her back porch, eating Panera and just like listening to the water and listening to the birds and feeling like so far removed from everything.
Right.
That like that moment was like content. Cause I think that like, for me, happiness is contentment. Like, it's not this extreme, oh my goodness, like, I can't stop smiling. It's just like this moment of like, I'm really peaceful right now. Mm. And that like, I'm here and I'm present and like, I'm focused on what's happening in front of me and I'm not thinking about anything else. So I would say that that is what happiness is to me, is those moments of just like, those like pockets of presence.
Mm-hmm. Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Is there any last thing that you would like to say?
Just, I think, go easy on yourself. Mm. But, yeah. And that's a reminder to myself to go easy on myself. Yeah. But, yeah, just, like, take care and don't try and, like, constantly push for something. Sometimes you just have to sit with it. If you're constantly pushing, you're just constantly wearing yourself out. You need to rest for a bit and then let the muscles heal so you can push again. But I struggle with that, definitely, yeah. Is the constant wanting to improve and never really resting. And then your body ends up making you do it. My advice from experience is to rest before your body makes you.
Yeah, that sounds like good advice.
Yeah. Because it will, and it'll suck. Yep.
But that's like what we started with when you said just like sit with the feeling and allow it to be there. Look at it. So if yeah. you notice that you need a break, take a break.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Simone. I really appreciate that.
No problem. Thanks. Thanks for this chat.
Yeah. So that was my interview with Simone. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of it. Let me know your thoughts. Follow me on Instagram at goddamnhappinesspod, on Facebook, My Goddamn Quest for Happiness, and check out aldo.lu for more. Thanks again. See you next time. Bye-bye.